Welcome to the Transform Your Mind radio show and podcast. I'm your host, Coach Myrna Young, and today I am bringing a very sad state of affairs on. We're going to talk on this show. I am speaking today with Mary Lee McLean, and Mary Lee is going to be talking to us today about her experience with sexual abuse in the home and how to protect your child. This is a very personal story for Mary Lee, and I welcome her braveness and her transparency. So Mary Lee, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be on your show, Myrna. Very happy to be here and get this information out.
Well, thank you so much. I'm already getting goosebumps. All right, so let me tell you a little bit more about what we're going to be talking about today, and some background on Mary Lee's story and her book. But before I do that, I want to recognize that, you know, if you are new to the show or if you, been a regular listener, you know that I've spoken several times that I have been personally sexually abused when I was a child. I wrote a book about my experiences called Out of the Snares, A Story of Hope and Encouragement. And that's basically what I hope to do today. You know, with Mary Lee, you know, we're bringing awareness to an issue and we're giving some advice on hope and encouragement. That's basically, you know, my book. And a few weeks ago, I also interviewed Sher Monica Slaughter. And, you know, she talked about a very horrendous situation with sexual abuse by three men, and ended up with one of them, domestic abuse by three men, and the last one ended up sexually abusing her seven-year-old daughter. And at the show airing, she had just started a court case against this person. And that's basically what we're going to focus our time today on when I speak to Mary Lee. We're going to be talking about not only this horrible instance of sexual abuse or having to go through it, but all the extra ramifications that come after that. That is not the end. It's usually the beginning. So this is Mary Lee's biography. To most mothers, learning their child has been sexually abused is among their worst nightmares. Not for Mary Lee. Being unable to stop the abuse despite almost 16 years of effort and being robbed of almost all contact with that child is a nightmare most can't comprehend. This nightmare began for real for Mary Lee, and her book, Prosecuted But Not Silenced, details it. The entire narrative of protective mothers, that is, mothers who have to share custody of their children with dangerous, abusive men, defiles belief. People with background knowledge on the plight of protective mothers will recognize many themes of Mary Lee's story. Women fall in love with the nice guy, who turns violent, uses the divorce to unleash a previously unimaginable level of cruelty and violence, and a court system so blinded to this issue and to the needs of the children, they facilitate it. But for those who find Mary Lee's story beyond belief, there's almost 100 pages of appendices providing the actual documentation mentioned in the chapters of the book, as well as background on the issue. Mary Lee's book deals with child sexual abuse. It's impossible to write about a child sexual abuse without describing child sexual abuse. So readers easily triggered by that should skip those descriptions, but by no means they should not read the book. In some ways, this book is the strongest testimony to the mother-child bond I've ever read. It's also a testimony to why this bond should not be broken capriciously, and why a system that does this cannot be tolerated. This book details with how our society is willing to sacrifice children on an altar of egos and ideologies, and it illustrates why that must stop. Marilee, I feel your pain, and I hope that helping you bring awareness to this subject can help other families.
Well, that was a great intro, and it really covered everything. I'm very impressed.
Well, thank you.
Great job.
All right. Well, all right, but we didn't get the story. So, Marilee, I mean, it seems that you've been through hell and back, as much hell as your daughter. So can you share your story and tell us why it led you to become an advocate?
Absolutely. I was involved in this many years ago. So there, I first just want to let you know there's lots of these cases today, but lots and lots of protective moms that can't protect their children. So that's one of the reasons I'm telling this story. But I've been married to a domestic abuser, domestic violence abuser, and I really got out of my marriage carefully. But this isn't a day when we didn't hear about domestic violence like you do today. There was no, red flags and books out there and no computers to tell you what was going on. And in that time, I thought a woman had to be beaten to be abused, but I didn't understand coercive control, the emotional abuse, the psychological abuse, and the physical abuse, but I suffered all those avenues. So I tell young girls today, especially in colleges, you have the red flags. You see those red flags, you run, because you marry that guy and you have a child with him. You're in this for life, because that child will be possibly abused too. So anyway, I'm not saying sexually, but in different ways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So anyway, my little girl, I had full custody of my little girl. When I divorced him, I was very careful how I got out. Even though I didn't know the red flags, intuitively I knew I better be careful getting out of that marriage. And I honestly felt like once I got out of that marriage, it was like a ton of bricks was lifted off my shoulders. I could breathe. And through the years, there was the emotional abuse, where their eyes change in an instant. And, it's this nice, nice, perfect man, and in an instant, scary, evil-looking eyes are just gone. And I lived through that for so long. I didn't, because I was married for many years before I had a baby. So anyway, once I divorced him, there was a lot of going through the divorce in itself. I was stalked, emotional abuse, just physical, psychological. He would write editorials to the newspaper about our divorce, and they would print them, and it's not even true. And just lots of things went on. But finally, when my daughter was about, he didn't really want to see her when she was a baby that much. He wasn't into her. But once she turned like around two, he started wanting to see her more. And on a visitation, so I'll just give your reader or your listeners this, is that one time on a visitation, now I know everybody thinks they're two-year-olds, darling, but my little girl, I got her dressed that morning, and she had this little pink dress, and she had long dark hair and a ponytail, and she had these little blue eyes that danced, and literally I couldn't walk down the street without people stopping me to talk to her. And that day I got her ready. She's going to see her dad like at 4:00 in the afternoon, and I he would only have like a three-hour visit. And when I went to pick her up about 7 that evening, I knocked at the door and there was no answer. I thought, well, that's weird. I knocked again, no answer. And finally he comes to the door, and her clothes are strewn all over the living room floor, and he goes upstairs and brings her down the stairs wet, nude, and limp in his arms. Her hair was matted to her head. She was covered with sweat, and I said, what the heck happened to her? My gut pulled tight. I was just sick. He said, she's sick. And I said, well, that's funny. She was fine a few hours ago. And I got her clothes together, got her dressed, and got her out of there. But at that point, I knew I never would dream. I always thought he'd be the greatest father. That was one of the reasons I married him. So I never saw anything like that in him. And I thought, well, she just got sick at his place. Well, later, within maybe 3 months of that, my little girl discloses sexual abuse to the daycare provider and to myself in detail that no child could possibly come up with.
A two-year-old.
She was 2.5 when she did. And I called my sister, who was a nurse at Children's Hospital, and I said, what do I do? And this is what she's saying. She said, don't say anything to her. Ask her in the morning what happened, and if she repeats the same thing, don't mention her father's name. Take her to a pediatrician. So that's exactly what I did. She repeated the same thing, took her to a pediatrician. They notified social services, and that's when my nightmare began. So
when they checked her, did they find evidence?
No, they didn't even check her at that point. She went, he had supervised visits. Social services started. Oh, the pediatrician? No, there was no evidence at that point.
Okay.
And so they go. She goes to social service to see her dad. And, you know, the perfect father. I'd watch him through this window, and he's just like the perfect dad, you know. And I'm watching the social workers watch him thinking, oh, what a great dad. I'm thinking, oh, my God, this is going to be tough. And I met that day by a GAL, guardian ad litem, which is a lawyer for the child. And she meets me with this thing. And she said she had four things she wanted to discuss with me. And I'm thinking, well, this is weird, you know, but I can deal with this. And I go into this room, and they had other social workers there and the father. And she interrogated me like nothing I've ever seen on TV. Why would your daughter continue to say this if you weren't coaching her? Because maybe it's going on. And the next question will be, I'm going to have you do the psychological evaluation. I'm going to have him do it. I said, well, good. Maybe we'll get to the bottom of this. And she points her finger in my face and goes, maybe we'll find out about you. And that, and I just read that Dr. Baker's report, psychologist that had just came out from my daughter after about six or seven visits and said, yes, she's being sexually abused, and she's been exposed to sexual stimuli, and handed me the report and had tears in her eyes. And it was like the first of me, really. I knew what was going on, but to hear a professional say, yes, this is going on. So I said to the GAL in that meeting, I said, have you read Dr. Baker's report? And she said, Dr. Baker doesn't state there's any kind of abuse. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, am I going crazy? I just read that report. I said, have you talked to the babysitter who spends quality time with my little girl? And she's not met the babysitter, but she'd been on the case for 3 months, and she'd been working behind the scenes and been working with the father. And at that point, she said, this is parental alienation. Well, I didn't even know what parental alienation meant. Now, this is a term I'll bring up later with you, Myrna, and with the audience. But at that point, she said, parental alienation. I said, parental alienation? I said, I've been over backwards for this man to be in her life. I had a great relationship with my own father, and I want her to have a chance to have the same. And she goes, this child's going to foster care. She had a foster care home lined up before I even walked in that morning. Now, this
is ridiculous. That is horrible. She taken away from you when you were not. Wow.
And here it is. You know, it's not like we're living together and you'd have to, you know, separate the parents or separate the child from the parents who are in the same home. So
right.
Put her in foster care and totally traumatize her. She's never been away from me. I'm the sole caretaker. You know, we know what it does to little kids.
And the judge agreed with that? Because the judge normally has to agree with that.
She went to a judge before all this. She'd all had us planned for months on end. She'd been working this for months. I didn't even know if she was on the case. I'd never met her. And so they said she's going into foster care. And I got up, and I had just hired an attorney the day before, and I had called him and told him what was going on, but I held it together because I knew if I emotionally went nuts, they'd say, oh, look at this mother. She's in out. I remained together, but I laid my head down at the desk, and I cried as if I died. I mean, you just had my soul ripped out of me. And the social worker comes up and taps me very coldly on the shoulder and says, you can go say goodbye to your daughter now. And I couldn't even feel my legs. It was like a gray mist around me. I couldn't even walk, and I get up, and I can't even hardly see, and I'm walking down the hallway, and they go, look at her. She can't say goodbye to her daughter. And I just kind of put my hand out to the side and said, oh, yes, I can, because I wanted to make sure my baby knew I was leaving. I just didn't leave her there. And I said, Mommy has to go to work. And she looked at me like she couldn't understand, because we were going roller skating that day. And obviously I had tears in my eyes, and she didn't know what was going on. And they had the police escort me out. Can you imagine that?
And you are kidding, because you were saying that her father sexually molested her. You are now the evil person.
Yeah,
oh, my goodness.
Reversed. And I drove 100 miles an hour to Dr. Baker's office, and I walked in. My makeup was all over my face. And she goes, what the hell happened to you? And I said, my God, they just took my baby from me. You know the truth. You fight for us. And she said, oh, I had an idea they'd do something like this. And I told them, absolutely not. So while she's in foster care, you know, I'm like looking out the city lights of Denver, Colorado, wondering where my baby is. I've never been away from her. You know, who's she with? Does she know what's going on? She's not, you know, how would she understand any of this? I've never left her. And so she does horribly in the foster care, and they decided to put her in another foster care home, which ends up being the daycare provider, which was good because at least she knew the daycare provider. And it was horrific. I was horrific. And then my daughter displayed more sexual behaviors while she was in the daycare, and she called the GAO, and they were going to move her to another foster care home. She says, you do that to this baby, you'll kill her. They put her back on my home, but I was not to bring up the abuse again, and I lost custody. And this during this time, the GAL went into court and said I had parental alienation syndrome. Okay, parental alienation syndrome was concocted in the 1980s by Dr. Richard Gardner. Now, he was he self-published his books, and he sent them to all the courts in the nation. So all these women in the 80s started losing their children, which they're doing today. So this is 2018. But in the 80s, they all started losing their children to the abusers. And nobody could believe this was going on. And so in his own books, he states, it's okay for the pedophile to come out of the closet and choose whom they want to love. It's God's will. And that
what?
We need to have more
You are
it's okay
kidding
for
me.
The pedophile to come out of the closet and choose whom they want to love. It's God's will. We need to have more pity for the pedophile than scorn. It makes little girls and little boys better sexual partners. And he also states we all
what?
Have pedophilia within us. This is in his own publishing, in his own book, self-published. So,
and you mean the court is listening to that? That's
the
who they're using?
The
is there...
not reading this. They're still using this theory. It's debunked.
Oh.
It's not approved by the American Medical Association.
Well,
nor the
obviously
American
not.
Association. And so, yet they're still turning.
It's against the law. It's called rape.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Not
and
loving,
fathers
right?
Fathers are using it because they can say the mother has parental alienation syndrome, and so they're losing custody. So I lost.
Well, I think I can understand what parental alienation means. It means if you're going through a divorce, then you want to ban the father from the child's life so you can tell them to say that they're being sexually abused. Is that basically what they're saying the motive of this parental alienation is?
Yeah. Parental alienation syndrome is usually when there's sexual abuse, right? And what it is there's only 2% of false allegations from studies they've done. So, I mean, you're
right.
Sending 98% of those children to live with their abuser because we're not looking at the 2% that women
right.
make a false allegation.
Yeah.
So that's very rare. Nobody's going to put themselves through this nightmare. You know, you lose
no.
everything you own trying to protect your child, and you wouldn't even come out. You'd have to be pretty ridiculous to ever come
yes.
up with something like this. I mean, pretty bad.
Yes, you would be.
So anyway, I end up
to go through foster care system and go through guardian ad litem and go through being, you know, attacked. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What is the purpose?
Every day. I was in court not for one day, not for a week. I was in court for months at a time. I went to court for 10 years trying to fight for her. So in this time period, I lose, and what they use is the best interest of the child, the parent that's more able to nurture the relationship with the other parent.
Yep.
Well,
yep.
obviously,
yep.
I'm not able to nurture that relationship with the father, so I lost custody. Now I have to go back into court to fight that issue, and I hire two new attorneys to appeal all that, and I end up with these two therapists. I'm trying everything I can. I'm going to the governor of Colorado. I've hit every avenue I could in the state of Colorado. I started lobbying in Washington, D.C. And working with a law firm in Washington, D.C., where I would go in, they'd set up my appointments on the Hill, I'd lobby all day, and then come back to the airport and come home. On one occasion, I'm doing that and lobbying, and I come back home, and I go to call my attorneys on a payphone. We had payphones. We didn't have cell phones. And I call my attorneys, and the paralegal answers the phone, and she goes, Nerlie, they're taking your daughter away from you right now. And I said, my God, they can't do that. I'm not even present. So they do these ex parte hearings, which means without the party present, without the parents.
But your lawyers were there.
Yeah, but I'm not there. I'm not present.
Okay.
You shouldn't be able to go in and take a child
right.
away from a mother without me even there.
Wow.
So they call my attorneys, and the judge is on the phone. They're doing an ex parte emergency hearing to take my child away from me. And I tell the paralegal, you tell my attorneys not to take that phone call. And they said, Merrily, they have to. It's the judge. I said, you tell my attorneys not to take that phone call. Merrily, they have to. It's the judge. She hung up. I knew at that moment. Now, this has been after 2.5 years of witnessing her being abused. And by this point, she has I'm not going to go into the details. It's in my book. Physical evidence. She has three doctor reports, three hospital reports, three police reports. This little baby told doctors, policemen, social workers, psychologists. She told everybody what was happening to her.
I actually can't believe this story. It's absolutely ridiculous.
It was horrific.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she, I, I, um, at this point, with all that evidence, these two therapists run a document to a judge on a Monday morning with the docket full, saying I have PAS, parental alienation syndrome. So I lose my daughter because I have PAS, which is a made-up theory, and I'm now in supervised visits where I get to see my daughter, this is out of 8 years, 1 hour a week in a room 8 by 10 feet. You can't even imagine what this is
like. So where does she live now? Does she live with the dad or still in foster care?
No, she's grown up. She's a completely grown woman, and she's doing okay. She's going through a lot right now because she's dissociative.
No, I mean at this time in the story, where when they took her away and you had these visits. Where was she?
Foster to the dad completely. I got to see her. I couldn't even go to her school. I had a restraining order that I couldn't go within 15 feet of her school. I couldn't
you
go to her
kidding
ballet,
me.
to her swim. I taught her to swim when she was two.
I mean, you hear some horrific stories, but this beats all. Because you said your daughter was sexually abused. Now you are the enemy and you're ill. Wow, I now see when you talk about corruption, because that is absolute corruption.
I'm supposedly alienating. What did they do to me? They completely took me out of my daughter's life. Not only did they take me out, I have a wonderful family. I grew up in a great family, and her grandparents adored her. She talked to them almost every day. They were dying. All her aunts and uncles, cousins, everybody that knew she was being sexually abused was completely cut out of her life. She was isolated to live with that abuser. So you talk about Stockholm syndrome. She's isolated. I didn't have the police going, like when you see somebody that's being raped or, you know, they go in to fight to get that child out of that situation. I didn't have that. I didn't have the police going over there and fighting to get my child back. I didn't have anybody on my side fighting to get my child home. There was no candlelight, let's get this baby home. I had tons of news coverage. I mean, 7 News in Colorado covered my case for weeks on end, and they did an incredible job. And I still couldn't get her home. And I went to the DA, the district attorney, and I proved to him. I put a black binder together that I tell all mothers to do when I talk to the moms today. And put all your pertinent information in there. That's why I was able to write this book. That's why I had all the
documentation
right. of what was going on. And so if they have that together, they can go talk to the DA, or they can go talk to senators or congressmen or the governor. And that's what I did. And the DA admitted he believed my child was being abused. But he said, let's see what this lower court judge does. And if he takes that child away from you, we will step in and do something. Well, he didn't. And I did lose my child. I went to another hearing. And even with all the news media coverage, they put a gag order on me. And that's what they do with these women. A gag order means to silence that
talk.
Person
right.
so you can't talk about the case. So no news media, no information whatsoever about the case. They actually openly talked in the courtroom about taking the case number off the file so the media couldn't get to it. I mean, it was unbelievable.
I want to ask you something. Was your ex-husband powerful? Because he obviously had some clout,
No, these men don't have to have clout. The system is set up to go against you in this world. I've seen women come with lots and lots of money that they were millionaires themselves and still lose. Yes, these men are narcissists. Wow. They're sociopaths. They're psychopaths.
Yeah.
You're dealing with all three of those behaviors, and our courts don't get that. They don't know what a narcissist is. They don't know what a psychopath is. They don't know what a sociopath is.
They don't
know what child abuse is.
They
don't even allow the domestic violence in. I mean, the domestic violence in itself should be a crime. A child being raped, if you or I were raped, Myrna, it would go to criminal court. A child being raped by her own father goes into family court and becomes a family issue. This is not a family issue. This is an abuse issue.
No. Wow.
So the safety of the child needs to come first, and that does not happen in any of these cases. So that's pretty much, I was in supervised visits. I mean, I watched that beautiful, long, dark hair fall out to paper fine thin, about an inch long all over her head. I watched her eyes go into a trance-like state. At one point, I remember her lying on the floor, and I would be a therapist for that 1 hour I was with her and give her all the love I could give her just to let her know I was still there. I think that's really important for all the moms to do is stay in there. I know they can't stay in those supervised visits because they're expensive. They cost a lot of money, and they're so emotionally depleted and financially. They're just depleted. They just can't make it, and I can understand it because that was probably I was being torn apart in the courtroom every day. And I could take that easier than I could take watching my daughter suffer and getting see her an hour awake treated as a criminal. And she, you know, she lay on the floor and she said, I can't see you. She closed her eyes real tight. And I said, you can't do see me. She said, no, I can't see you. I just want to die. That's what I had to live with. And I go home and I throw myself in her bed and cry for hours, you know.
Wow. Yeah, well, what I opened with, that you've been through hell. I mean, this is really a story of, you know, living in hell. Wow. So like I said, it's I am so glad that you are, you know, on the show bringing awareness. One of the things that we always feel is when we're going through something that we're all alone. But now that you have been through it, you know, that you started off by saying there's hundreds and hundreds of cases like this. So as an advocate, thousands, right? So as an advocate, are you getting anywhere with changing these laws?
Well, what we're doing, I speak at a battered mothers conference every year for probably the last 10 years. And then that's where mothers are coming in from all across the nation, scraping and borrowing to get there and kind of in the same situation. And kind of they are in the same situation. And when I speak, I mean, I'm giving them hope because I did get my daughter back. Most of these cases are not getting their children back. And
how
so,
old was she when you got her back?
She was 12 and a half. So it was a long time.
Years.
And even then, she still had to go to her dad 50% of the time and continue to possibly be raped. So they don't stop.
Gosh. So, you're breaking my heart, Marilee.
Huh?
You're breaking my heart. Wow.
I know. Wow. It's a heartbreaking. And it's like, so I want to give those moms hope to stay in there and fight because they can never, ever give up. And I know the one thing about my daughter, she used to say to me, Mommy, I fly to your house at night and I'm on the windowsill, but I'm always with you. So she never let go either. And I, you know, she knew I was out there fighting. And then those supervisors are absolutely the most terrific thing I think anybody can possibly go through. But you got to stay in there if you can.
Yeah.
And so when I got
for the children's sake, it's not even much for your sake, but for your children's sake, because you don't want them to feel abandoned issues as well, which is high on, you know, kids that have been taken away from their parents. They have these abandonment issues and they have them for the rest of their lives, right?
Right. And
I was a foster mom, so you know, I deal with that. Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to interrupt. No, I was saying something else. Go ahead, honey.
No, I'm saying that I was a foster mom, so I've dealt with the guardian ad litem, and I've dealt with the issues, psychological issues that happens to the kids when you take them away from their parents. You know, the government always seems to think that they're doing it for the best of the children, but it's not really in the long run. Yes.
Oh no, there's lots of money involved in all that, and you know, put the child in foster care, and that's the trauma is unbearable.
Yeah,
and I agree they need to be taken away from an abusive parent, but you know, you give them to a family. You don't just give them to another foster home. It's crazy. It's crazy what's going on.
So yeah, I know you're answering the questions regarding if anything is changing. Are you seeing a dent? Are you still advocating or? I mean, you mentioned earlier that you used to go to D.C. How is that going to change these rules and laws? And is it federal or is it, you know, only to Colorado?
Oh no, it's federal. It's nationwide, and there's a lot trying to be done. So really, there's Barry Goldstein is doing the Safe Child Act, so pass the Safe Child Act, so that you know you have to look at the safety first, and that means domestic violence cases. For the courts to look at that instead of the best interest of the child, if there's domestic violence or child abuse going on, you have to look at that issue first. Now, we have that law here in Colorado, but the judges still are not abiding by it. So I think there's going to have to be more than just that done. Also in California, California Protective Parents Association is trying to get Resolution 73 passed, which is also the safety of the child come first. But that's a resolution, and it really needs to be law into it. That's federal. So it needs to go into every single state. But there's a lot more. It's more education. I think there's training for judges, which I would love to do training for judges. And I don't think judges should be trained by other judges. They need to hear from advocates like myself that have been through this, how this affecting their child's life for a lifetime.
Yeah,
and trauma
it does.
And the adverse childhood experiences, we know how it costs billions of dollars because we're not looking at what this causes with the drug addiction or alcoholism or suicide rates. And so there's ways to train these people. And then if you get into the CUSI evaluators and the GALs, that I don't know. I find that a lot of those people that are in those professions do not have a clue. And there's a study that was done by Dr. Saunders. Dan Saunders is with the Justice Office that will actually lay out how GALs, judges, lawyers are not trained in this at all, CUSI evaluators. You know, same thing. And that report is very important. So there's just information that has to get out there. But the main thing is we need mainstream media. Mainstream media hasn't touched this since they did my case with CNN, International News, in 97 or something. Or maybe one other case they covered, and they didn't even cover it well. But mainstream media needs to cover this daily. I mean, if I figure we get upset about the, you know, immigration, which is horrific when they're ripping these babies out of these moms' arms.
Yeah.
Well, how do you think it feels having a baby that's being abused and ripped out of mom's arms, and she's a U.S. citizen?
That's a good point. That's a very, very good point.
So, you know, our society needs to hear how this is
happening. You know, right. Everybody was up in arms about that.
Society is huge.
And you got full media coverage in that. But in the meantime, the DCF is ripping kids out of their parents' home, you know, all the time right here. And they've been doing it for decades.
Yeah.
And nobody's up in arms about that. That's a very, very good point. Yep. Well, all right. We thank you for being so succinct and clear on, your telling of this story. And it's I'm pretty sure that everybody that's listening is as shocked as I am to hear, you know, what's going on. This is America of all places. My goodness. It sounds like I read this horrific book years ago, maybe in the 80s. It's called Not Without My Daughter. This sounds like something, over.
That's in my book. That's funny. That is what I was going to name this book. And
that was a chilling story. But,
that's exactly what I was going to name this book.
India or something. Or I can't even remember where the country was. But it was one of those countries where women had no rights whatsoever. And the man was,
Well, this is a lot about patriarchal society.
But really, you should have named that because you would have got gotten some extra push from that name. Yes, so awesome. All right, we're going to be right back. Don't go anywhere. We're going to get into some more detail of some of the red flags that the Mr. Nice Guy shows you so you can prevent all this instead of being reactive. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Are you dissatisfied with your life and your job? Do you feel bored, unfulfilled, maybe unhappy, stressed, or burnt out? Do you expect more from life? Then you might be interested in Chris Morgan's new book, Have the Courage to Be You. How Not to Live a Life of Quiet Desperation. Chris Morgan makes a compelling case of why choosing yourself really is the only sensible option you have in your life. Don't count on your job, your company, or your bosses to fill your life with meaning and purpose. Instead, create your own future and chart your destiny by changing your attitudes towards yourself and life itself. Have the Courage to Be You was written by Chris Morgan, CEO of www.retiredby35.com, an early retirement and personal growth blog. That website again is www.retiredby35.com. 5-star rated. Have the Courage to Be You by Chris Morgan. Now available on Amazon and where all books are sold.
Hello, and welcome to samgood.com. We offer innovative solutions for the lawn care and vehicle washing industry for both customers and providers. We welcome you to review the information on our site so you could learn how we operate and how you can benefit. We're not just another lawn care or vehicle washing business. We're transforming the industry by directly connecting customers with qualified providers. Now, hold on to your seat for a minute, because what I'm about to say will probably shock you and hopefully pique your interest. Listen very carefully. The first 1,000 customers to receive 20 ordered jobs, meaning lawn care yard cuts, vehicle washings, or both, they will receive what we call CRAF, a Customer Relief Appreciation Fund, which is $10,000 paid out to beneficiaries of a customer if they pass away. Now, the customer still receives the funding even if we never do another job for them again after the initial 20. We offer this as an added benefit to show our appreciation to our valued customers. But wait, there's more. If a beneficiary of that customer were to pass away, that customer would receive the $10,000 or more. We say more because after we've done 20 jobs for the customer, $100 is added to the $10,000 for each additional job performed. So, every time a customer wants work done by us, we add $100 to their fund. We are the only company around that's rewarding customers on this level for just trying out our services. And our ideas of how to reward customers are only going to get better as we grow. Our valued customers will always remain our top priority. Thank you, and we look forward to having you as a customer or provider.
Welcome back to the Transform Your Mind radio show and podcast. I'm your host, Coach Myrna Young. And today, I am blown away by the story that I'm hearing from my guest, Ms. Marilee McQueen. Marilee is talking about sexual abuse in the home, what she had to go through to try to protect her daughter, having her daughter taken away from her at 2 years old. It's a horrific story. But what we're going to do now as we get into the second half is I want to ask Marilee about what does she think now that she's looking back to her relationship with domestic violence and her husband before that day, that dreadful day where she came to pick up her daughter and saw her clothes strewn all over the floor, and her daughter was full with sweat, and her clothes, her father giving her back to her limp. Before that day that opened her eyes, was there anything that you can put your hands on, Marilee, that told you that this was a red flag way back? And you didn't say how many years you guys were married, but how many years were you been married?
Yeah, we were married 8 years.
8 years.
Yeah, before I had her. So
okay. 10 years
into
it.
For
right.
a long, yeah. And I was with him for about 12 years. I waited a long time before I married him. So was trying to make sure. But he was really good. I mean, these guys are clever. They're manipulative. They arrest that behavior at a very young age. What was kind of amazing is that one time I was reading this magazine article, and I think it's in my book. It is. And it was I wish I could find that article. But anyway, it was in there, and it actually laid out who I was married to. And I read that, and I just kind of lost my breath, and I thought, oh, my God, this is it. And so I wrote on the bottom of that article, what would you choose, Marilee? Would you like real love or whatever, something? I was questioning myself. I pulled that sheet out, and I kept it in a drawer by my bed for all those years. So somewhere in there, I knew I wasn't dealing with something normal here. And and they're so good. I mean, he treated me great, lots of times, and they keep you on a high level, feeling like you're on a pedestal. I grew up in a family where I was really loved and protected, and So he knew how to make me feel those things, but he could take it away in a second, and he would.
Yes.
So he was very cruel, very, very cruel. And I know that my daughter saw that, too, because I asked her at one point, I said, Tommy, did you never see his eyes change? And she just went blank, because obviously, you know, she's seen his eyes were changing.
Yeah.
Like that.
When it clicks. But, you know, I have this affinity. I read a book once about a psychopath and how he set up this woman that he was dealing with and the story was that, you know, he was so good to her and so perfect with her and then he separated her from her family by telling her that he had this big house, very expensive house in England, and she spent all her money trying to renovate this house only to find out that he was renting the house, and then she had to actually get away in the middle of the night barefoot and walk 2 hours in the cold in order to get away from him because he said to her if she ever leaves, he would kill her. And after I heard that story, that has always resonated with me about what these psychopaths do with this nice guy. And, you know, it's very important, you know, there are nice guys around that are not psychopaths, but, you know, you always have to dig deeper. And I remember something as well that Halle Berry, you know, she was married to somebody that treated her really bad. Now, I wasn't a psychopath, but she said that her mother told her that whenever something looks too good to be true, it usually is. So these are some of the things that I keep in my head, that you always have to investigate when something looks too good to be true. So, I mean, I am sure that the article that you read laid out the signs that someone is a psychopath, right? And they talk about all the different things, right, that they do. I'm almost sure that's what happened, right? And you said that he ticked off on all of them, right? So that was your warning sign, right?
That was awakening thing for me.
Right.
Here it is. I found the article. I can read it to you.
Okay.
An article I found on Ted Bundy years later, 55th profile, the psychopath's hot sexual exterior and stone-cold interior create a combustible mix that's irresistible to women as fire is to a pyromaniac. I don't know how to say that, pyromaniac. They are men who use, abuse, manipulate others for the sheer pleasure of it. In fact, most psychopaths would sooner murder your soul. That's what I believe my ex did. I always afraid he was going to kill me, and there's lots of things that made me feel that he would kill me. But he never killed me because it was much more fun to murder my soul and watch me suffer for the rest of my life. Rather murder your soul than your body. Sociologist Jose Sanchez, and I get that part, and he describes them as sophisticated, fluent types who blend, and for many women are the most dangerous men in the world. The mask of sanity makes the psychopath so dangerous and terrifying. He is intelligent and has irresistible charm.
Yeah.
That's my
answer. That's one of their calling cards.
Personal gain. Their charm is legendary. Mm-hmm. He is so charming, so capable of sounding sincere that a woman is mesmerized, especially if she wants romance. Psychopaths are incapable of feeling concern or remorse for their consequences of their actions. They can calmly rationalize the most heinous crime.
They have no conscience. They have no conscience, right?
Quite normally for a while and then suddenly commit a brutal, stupid, irresponsible act. They're undeniably narcissistic and they may express love but are incapable of feeling it. So this is exactly, I knew all that time. And I think, you know, I remember when I divorced him, I went to a therapist to try and get grips because of things he was doing to me after I divorced him, and I was really afraid. And she told me, "What are you doing to protect yourself? And do you have a gun?" And I said, "A gun?" And she said, "Yeah, do you have a gun?" And I said, "Why? My parents live with me, and I change all the locks on the doors." And I went through these journals that he had written in for many years, and he wrote how he has demons inside of him that are clawing at his insides. They dwell terrorizing, agonizing blows to his guts as they howl and ride along. And he also wrote how he had militarily strategized and planned to win me. Now he's met his greatest enemy. She's mine to conquer and destroy. Example, Nietzsche, that's it, Mara Lee. So, I mean, there was lots of things there.
Wow. And normally, these psychopaths move on to the next person. Is he remarried?
Yeah, he did move on to somebody else, and he tortured her as well.
Yeah, that's what they do. They just move on to the next person. Listen, I know them very well. You know, I have not, thank goodness, had to deal with anybody personally like that. But I
there are women.
You know, I'm a reader,
too, I mean,
right?
Not
Sorry?
For a male. There are women psychopaths too. But,
oh yes, of course.
But I think we need to be careful. You know,
yes.
Women need to be very careful who they marry.
Yes. All right. Well, we're almost out of time, so let's talk about you know, how our readers can get in touch with you. Now, before we do that, quickly, I want to get this question in. How do you protect your child's mental health in this situation? Because we've talked about, you know, the father, we've talked about you, but how is your daughter doing? How did she deal with this situation then? How did you try to protect her other than showing her your love? And how is her mental health now today?
Well, she had to dissociate in order to get through this. As I said earlier in this conversation, she separated out of her body to get through it, and that's what they do. And that mentally saved her. And I think today now she's in therapy working very hard on everything she's been through. Let me read this to you really quick. It's not long.
Okay.
Because this tells you where she is, okay? And I think it would be really important to say, like, okay, I went from a 3 or 4-year-old where everything stopped. I could not access my being until now. I am back. I can't believe it. A 4-year-old soul in a 25-year-old body. She can dance, sing, swim. She has studied humanity and traveled the world, ending by her true love by the sea, where she gets to be her true mermaid, loving her little kingdom by the sea. We did it, Mom. It's just the beginning. So much work to do, and I am ready. Thank you for always. This makes me cry. I can't say it. Thank you for always being on a journey with me, my number one supporter. I am real and solid in my body that is all mine. I have not felt my body in so long, the texture of my skin, the water on my scalp, nor have I seen my own shadow constantly in motion. If there's more to this, I won't read anymore, but it's pretty heart-wrenching. And this pain does not end.
That is beautiful. I'm glad that I asked the question. Yep.
Yeah. So she knows she's pretty incredible. She's a beautiful writer. And I think... I think she'll make some changes in the world, too, but right now she's just trying to live.
Yeah, yeah. You know, make your testimony, your testimony, just like you. You know, you're advocating for other children, and she is going to be able to help children that have gone through what she's gone through. And she had the protection of being able to separate herself, and now she can feel again. You know, now she can let love in. That's beautiful. And, you know, I commend you. I mean, obviously, you know, mothers are born for this stuff. I mean, we don't need any manuals or any kind of,
this is a horrific, I think mothers are born for this. They are, they're strong, and they're mama lions, and they're going to fight to the death.
Yes, exactly.
But come on, this has got to stop.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm trying to say, though, is not that we want this to continue, but what I was about to say is that, I'm glad that you stuck with her and you let her know you loved her, and those 1-hour sessions, you made the best of it and all that. But the reason I said that, you know, mothers are fighters or are strong, I mean, there's not too many mothers that would walk away from their child, you know, not too many of them, unless they're mentally, something's wrong with them. But, you
well,
know,
a lot
we,
of these mothers
fight.
Had to walk
right.
away. They've been
exactly.
forced to walk away.
Right, exactly, right. So, you know, I commend you for... you know, sticking with it. I commend you for the pain and, you know, not fighting. You know, you're a warrior. And that's basically what I feel myself, that I'm a warrior. I'm a warrior for my child. Yeah, that's what I was born to be myself. It's my dharma. And that's obviously what yours is too. So I commend you for that. So, yeah, so now how can, you know, anyone get a hold of your book? How can anyone, if someone wants to reach you because they're going through something right now that's similar to yours, and they need some support or some guidance or, you know, some direction to go next, which is obviously, you know, the space that you're in. So how can they get in touch with you?
Right. The best thing is my book, Prosecuted But Not Silenced, Courtroom Reform for Sexually Abused Children. And if you Google my name, Marilee McLean, you can find it that way too, but it's on Amazon. It's Barnes & Noble, lots of different bookstores. And you can also go to my website, which is Marilee, it's M-A-R-A-L-E-E, McLean is McLean.com. And there's lots of information there for anybody that's going through this. And there's ways to get a hold of me for anything, whether it's speaking or you just want to talk or whatever. Just call that number. And what else can I tell you? I think that's it. That's pretty much it. There's lots of information out there, and lots of articles that I've written are in that website.
Yeah, well, God has given you a purpose. You know, one of the first purpose was to make sure that you are worrying for your child and trying to save her soul. Your husband tried to take yours, but you tried to save your daughter's soul, and it sounds like you've done an excellent job. So I commend you for that. I commend you for being an advocate and sharing this story. I am, I shouldn't say that, but I was about to say that I'm positive that, you know, most of the people that are listening would not have heard it, but I'm not sure. You know, sometimes you've got to put your ear to the ground to hear what's going on in the world. But I have never heard anything like it, and I'm glad that I am in the, you know, the capacity of broadcasting it on the mountaintop, so that awareness can start. And awareness is the way to change anything, because if we don't know what's going on, then we can't change it. And also, these men that are preying on, you know, of course, women do it too, I think, but on a much smaller scale, and we're talking about what we know, and we're women, but the men that are preying on women and being nice and just being fake so that they can get something from them, and they can terrorize them and terrorize their children. You know, now they're going to even their own children. Right, but normally is not their children, it's their stepchildren that they, you know, they terrorize or go after.
That happens a lot.
Yes, it happens a lot.
Yes, we do.
It happens a lot, so that's what I'm saying, and that's their goal. When they see something that they want, they like you said, he strategized how he can get you, you know, and be nice to you. It's creepy, and we've got to be able to diffuse that by calling their bluff and understanding that, you know, yeah. And another thing is that, you know, years ago when I was single, I went on to one of these dating websites, and Match.com, I think it was Match.com, and they had something that they were doing to, they had these questions, 25 questions, so that you can ask your partner so that you can qualify them to see if you guys are a match. And one of the things they said is that, you know, you should not marry somebody for 2 years after you met them, because in the first 2 years, they're usually putting on an act and they're fake. So if there's one thing at least we can do is, you know, don't jump into these relationships with these men until after 2 years, but I know you did that too, so your guy was really good.
I waited a long time, maybe, sure, yeah.
Yeah, your guy was really good. He's obviously one of the better ones, but most people can't keep up this charade for more than 2 years, which is why they said that you should at least have 2 years so that you can weed out, you know, the fake.
Well, I think you see the signs. I mean, if I would have been smart when I was that age and had the wherewithal of what's really going on here and understood domestic violence and understood what I was up against, had any signs to understand it, I wouldn't have been there. But you know what? I kept thinking, you know, they make you think it's you, the gaslighting, you know.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You're overreacting to the way they're acting. Oh no, you're not overreacting. This is real. Yep. This is real stuff.
Well, they're experts, and they're, you know, everything that they do is calculated, exactly. And you're just there responding to love. And again, one of the reasons that men do it to women is because we're emotional creatures, and we're always looking for love. The women that do it, on the other hand, I mean, I'm not understanding how they do it, because men are normally not emotional, and you can't really play a man how a man can play a woman. A man can play a woman like a violin, right? Because we're emotional creatures, and one of the other things, you know, that we do is we fall in love over good sex. And that's why they use that in there too.
That's another one. But you know, I read something about being an empath. The E-M-P-A-T-H, empath, they look for that kind of person that's really caring and really soft and giving, those kind of people that, you know, I came from a background where I had such a good family and so much love that I just thought everybody was good. You know, I didn't really know there were people out there like this. So
exactly.
The naivete of it all.
You're very right. They probably don't go for the street smart woman, because street smart women can see through them right away. Very true. Good point.
Yeah.
You go for the sweet, nurtured person that believes everybody is good. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, we've taken this to the maximum time, and I want to thank you so much for sharing. I want to thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to broadcast your story and the situation. I feel honored that you came on the show and wanted to talk about this issue. Again, there's, you know, a big Me Too thing going on, where a lot of women are coming forward that, you know, they've been abused as a child. And even when I was speaking to, you know, your promoter, and she's telling me that it happened to her too, that it's, you know, the women that have been abused are not a minority. They're a majority.
Well, you know what? I feel that 90% of us, and I would say that, and that's probably the low number, have been sexually assaulted by the time they're in their 20s.
Yeah.
The problem with this that I have with it is that I'm a feminist, and I believe I'm going to go out to I'm believing the woman, you know. But these women are adult women coming forward. I'm talking about children here who are coming forward and not being protected. They can't say no to that big adult. They can't get away. Those women can get away. Those women can do something, not unless they're being raped, but
they can
get away the other way.
You're right. They make a choice. You're very right. You make a choice. Right. But it's not only women. A lot of people are coming forward with child sexual abuse, like I did. You know, I didn't talk about my child sexual abuse until I was in my 40s. Because, again, you don't want to talk about it because you have this shame that's associated with it. So there's all different kinds.
Damage. Yeah.
What was that?
A lot of damage. Yep. A lot of damage around it, you know. And it's the shame, and you think it was your fault and whatever.
Yep.
And every woman, you know, or whoever, boys too that have been abused. I get this is one thing I did want to say is that, you know, we get upset about, Sandusky, the coach, the Penn State coach that raped the boys and how put him in prison, how horrible he was. And the public gets outraged at that. And
yeah.
Outraged at the
I know. They suspended him and all kinds of stuff.
Is our family court system. The family court system knocks those off the hoop of how many more kids are being sexually abused and not protected.
Yep.
You know, Catholic priests, we're talking years of this. We're talking every day these children aren't, they're having to live with that perpetrator. Catholic priests are abusing a child for 6-7 days or maybe a year, and it's horrific. Don't get me wrong.
Of this is horrific. No, and listen, I understand you. But that's basically what goes on, goes on in this world.
Is
what you think is going to break the best news, and that's how the news works. It's all for ratings. You know what I mean? And they go where they think
this doesn't get to the top. It needs to get to the top, and I think there's a lot of abuse at the top. So they're not listening to this. They don't want to get it out there.
Right.
And you're fighting against the court system. Yep. You're fighting against patriarchy, male entitlement, all that. I mean, it is there. And so it's a part of the Me Too movement. This is the last.
Well, the only thing we can do is hope that now that we started the conversation, now that we started dialogue, now that we've opened awareness, that it gets better. I hope it doesn't take 100 years like it's taken to, you know, get rid of racism and feminism and all the things that is wrong with this country. That it doesn't seem to be going anywhere. It just keeps recycling. So I'm hoping that this issue can, you know, that we protect our children and we protect women.
Absolutely.
You know, because we're being bottom fed. You know, like we're the bottom feeders and people just feed on us.
It's like the Equal Rights Amendment. I'm for the Equal Rights Amendment, and I want women to get more pay, but all those women asking for more pay, if you took their money away, you took their children away, they wouldn't care about money. They don't know how much this is happening. They'd be fighting this issue over money. But you need the money to be able to fight this cause. So the bottom line is it hits everything. But believe me, You take a woman's children away from her, equal rights is going to hit skyrocket high, because that is really where the problem is lying, and it's happening.
Yes. All right. Well, listen, hey, thanks again, Mary Lee. I appreciate it. This was an absolutely beautiful conversation. Yes, yes, a beautiful conversation. I wish you luck in your book. Like I said, I'll help promote it and you know, write some reviews and so that you can be heard. So thanks again. I want to thank your listeners for tuning in to the Transform Your Mind radio show. Today, I hope to transform your mind on what's happening, you know, to our children, what's happening to, you know, the parents and the mothers, and what's happening in the court system as far as men making decisions that, you know, help other men and not the women and children. So, again, we are shining a light on the mountaintop, and hopefully that it will take root and that we will see some change. Thank you for tuning in to the Transform Your Mind radio show and podcast. Tune in every week for more guests that I bring you to transform your mind so that you can live your best life now. If you found this episode inspiring, or you know someone that can use this information, please share. You know, would love for you to subscribe so you don't miss any issues or any episodes. And, of course, post a review so that the show will be accessible to more people. So, once again, thanks again, Mary Lee. Do you have any final words?
Oh, I meant to say that about my book. It's an educational tool for judges, lawyers, psychologists. So if you buy it, give it to a judge, give it to a lawyer, give it to a social worker, a psychologist. We need to get this out there.
Perfect.
What's happening?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
I agree. I
thank
concur.
You for your time, and you did a great show.
All right. Thanks again. Well, until next time, namaste.